You are listening to a Bible talk recorded at the 1984 Western Christadelphian Bible School at Manuka. This is an evening lecture given by Brother Doug Shrimpton titled, Psalms of Ascent.
Thank you. Some little while ago, that isn't so very long, our own local ecclesia decided that they would like to do one or two ideas on the book of Psalms, and they chose for a general title, Who Shall Ascend the Hill of the Lord? And when it came my turn to speak, and the presiding brother got up to introduce me, he said, Who shall ascend the hill of the Lord? Brother Doug Shrimpton. Now, I didn't know whether to turn and run at that stage or not. When this invitation was extended to me to give one of these talks, the brother rang me and he said, well, what would you like to talk about? And I said, well, suppose we took your theme for the meeting and therefore that we should take the Songs of Ascents. And he said, well, we had picked one out for you, which was, Hear, O Israel, the Lord thy God is one Lord. And I said, well, I could probably combine the two. And apparently that brother subsequently rang Charlie and said, Brother Shrimpton's going to do total Songs of Ascents. And when he realized that I might be saying something about the other one too, there was such a tone in his voice, I didn't know whether it was fright or whether it was confusion or what it was. But in any case, that is how all this came about, or some of the ways this came about. So let us start with the Shema. That is that little few words, Hear, O Israel, the Lord thy God, the Lord is one. Now, the words themselves are, I feel, quite expressive. Shema Israel, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Now that is how it is if you said it in Hebrew. The Shema is roughly, pay attention. Look here, pay heed. Let's have all your undivided attention. If you sort of say Shema, it is a commanding word. It's a word that demands that you look up and pay attention. Israel, now if we syllabalize that and split it down into three little Hebrew roots, we get Ish, which is man, we get Ra, which is four, and El, which is God. So it is, listen, anyone who is a man for God. And then we have the Adonai, which is Lord. Actually, of course, it is the Tetragrammaton. But my own personal feeling is that we shouldn't use that word. It is sacred, it is set apart, it is sanctified. So I prefer to use Adonai. But it means, if anything, it means the Eternal One. And then the Eloheinu. The El is God, the O part makes it possessive case, and the N, strangely enough, in Hebrew, if you want to be masculine, you become a hen, because that is the way Hebrew works. I don't know why, but that's the way it works. And then you get the repeat of the Adonai, the Lord, and then the last little bit is Echad. Now, that is one. That is the Hebrew word for one, for singular, for unity. And any Hebraist will tell you that anything which is unity, which is one, is only one of a kind, and therefore that is unique. So if we just state this again, everybody pay attention. All those who are men, women, all those who are contenders for God, the Eternal One, the God who would have you for his own, that one in eternity, that God is unique. And that is what the Hebrews know as their Shema. Now, while we're just working over those little bits of Hebrew, we now come to this Songs of Ascents. And that also in Hebrew, and please don't let these little bits worry you, it says, Shir Hamor Heloth. Now, the Shur is, of course, what we normally take to be a psalm or a song. The ha is the ma is another little preposition. It can be with or the, it can be with or for. Many, many ways that little bit is used, and the aloth is to go up. Now, a shur is not necessarily and totally just a song or a psalm. A shur is essentially anything which is done to music. If you are dancing, you are sharim, you are dancing to music. If you are singing to music, if you are doing anything to music, even marching without singing, it is a shur. Then we have this little bit of the aloth. Now the word aloth is certainly a word of raising up, of ascending, of in some way or another, going from a low state to a high state. It's the word that's used when you put your sacrifice upon the altar. You have offered it up, you have elothed it. So that is what we have when we get these titles. This is something which is done to music, and it concerns going from a low state to a high state. That is what the title means. Now, each one of these psalms is entitled a song of ascents, or in some versions it's called the song or songs of degrees. This is degrees and not decrees. The difference, of course, is only slight in talking, but it's very significant in the way the psalms are written. So, when we sort of consider, and when you probably, many of you have read or heard people talk on these issues, and they say, well, these are marching songs, pilgrim songs, they are the songs that were sung when they were going up to Jerusalem, and this could probably be true. You'll also hear other explanations that they say that the songs were sung on the 15 steps up to the temple. And that could always be also be true. But in that particular case, I hae my doubts, as they say in Scotland. Because the 15 steps up to the temple would not have accommodated all the people who were there singing these songs of ascents. Now, there is another issue, of course, that if we are in a particular state, as you are up here on a hill, but you want to go to your capital city, you go up to that capital city, although you are actually going downhill to get there. Now, we have all these possible ways in which this songs of ascents can be considered, looked at, the way they can be a part of our thinking. I have in front of me, I have the authorized version, I have the revised standard version, and I also have what we know as the Sonsino version. The Sonsino version is a translation made by English-speaking Jews, and it is translated directly from the Masoretic text into English by people who know both languages thoroughly and competently. So if I read little bits from the Psalms and you try and follow me, and the words are not quite the same, it's because I'm using one or other of the versions, and I'm not going to interfere with the flow by quoting which particular version we're at. Now, to start at the beginning, which is well way through the Songs of Ascents, and I hope you won't find that confusing. We're going to start at the very psalm which contains the motto, the little quote, the text that we have on the wall. Behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. Now, we've already done one little exercise like this, and I would like you to help me do it again with this particular one. We'll do it now, and when we get through the Psalms and we come to this one, then I'm going to ask you to do it again spontaneously. I don't want to have to say, well, now this is what we're going to do. Behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. It is like the precious oil. Now, it's quite a short psalm. There's only three verses. The first single voice is this. Behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. Now, that is the single voice part. The communal voice are the last two verses. It is the reply to that statement. So I will say the first verse, and will you come in and repeat down to the end of that small little psalm. Behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. I hope in doing that you can feel a part of the action, that you can begin to feel that behold how good and how pleasant it is, a single statement, a proposition put to everybody there, everybody who's there and listening, behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. And you join with that thought and you say, yes, it certainly it is. It's like precious oil upon the head, like the dew of Hermon. For there the Lord commanded the blessing, even life forevermore. Now as we go back now to Psalm 120 and we come through eventually to Psalm 133, and at this particular point in 133, even life forever. And it is at this point that the idea of eternity is introduced into these Psalms. We have a conditional idea of eternity before that time. So, back to Psalm 120, the Songs of Ascents. The first words are, in my distress I called unto the Lord, and he answered me. O Lord, deliver my soul from lying lips, from a deceitful tongue. What shall be given unto thee, and what shall be done more unto thee, thou deceitful tongue? Now this is the point at which it starts. In my distress I called unto the Lord. And if you can remember, we won't turn it over now, the Psalm 134 is blessed are all those who stand in the temple of the Lord, who stand by night. The Lord bless thee out of Zion. So we're going from this stage here in my distress, in our distress, in the distress of everyone who seeks to be associated with these things. In my distress, I called unto the Lord and he answered me. We feel we are not calling in vain. The psalm says that we are in distress, we are calling, but we are conscious of the fact that there is some sort of response. And then we continue. O Lord, deliver my soul from lying lips, from a deceitful tongue. Whose deceitful tongue? Has somebody been telling stories about us? Has somebody been standing around and pointing a finger at us and saying, what a rotten lot of people we are? No, that's not what the text says. That's not what it means. It might mean, if we read it superficially, that it is that way. There are people who are accusing us. But what it is this, O Lord, deliver my soul from lying lips, from my own deceitful tongue. Because if we stop to think about it, how often do we actually and totally tell everything truthfully, completely, and without any form of qualification? The tongue that is introduced to us here is not the tongue of somebody else. We are in distress, we are afflicted with a tongue of deceit, and we are asking the Lord, and we do feel that we are going to get, or are getting, at least some part of an answer. And then the question says, well, what shall be done unto thee, and what shall be done more unto thee, thou deceitful tongue? The answer is given very quickly. Sharp arrows of the mighty with coals of broom. Coals of broom. I think you have a fair amount of broom down here, and you probably have never done it, because there's a fair amount of labor involved. Try and dig out a broom bush. You can get them out, and when you get the broom bush out, if you just leave those roots to dry for a little while, and then you use them on your fireplace, you'll find that that is an exceedingly hot fire you get from the root of the broom. In fact, the Arabs say you can make a fire with the roots of the broom, and it'll burn for 12 months. Now that's, of course, typical Arab exaggeration. But it is a wood that will burn for an awful long time. In New Zealand, they have a similar sort of tree. They call it the tia tree. And they, although the branches never grow any thicker than my wrist, which isn't a very big wrist, and I doubt whether you can ever get a piece of wood thicker than that, yet if you make a fire with that, you don't need many of those pieces to give you an awful lot of heat. So this is what the tongue deserves. Sharp arrows of the mighty, and along with that, coals of broom, an exceedingly hot, searing heat. Now you'll notice that it is still me, it is still I, in my distress. And then verse 5, woe is me. It's kept right with us. It's not taken away from us, it's not put onto anybody else. It is still us. Woe is me that I sojourn with Meshech, that I dwell beside the tents of Kedar. Now you can look up and see where Meshech and Kedar are. And of course, Meshech is named among the sons of Japhet, and generally means a people living near the Black Sea or the Caspian Sea. And the other one is the second son of Ishmael. And it really is the Bedouin Arabs. They are typical barbarian races, and the psalmist does not mean that he's actually dwelling among them. He is forced into flight from Zion by persecution. His residence is with heathen whose way of life are quite foreign to him. And I think, while you may have other ideas, and they may be just as legitimate as this one, the general intention here, that the person who is offering this psalm is very conscious of the fact that they are dwelling in the wrong place, that their circumstances are not right, that they are not where they should be. My soul hath full long her dwelling, had full long had her dwelling with him that hated peace. I am all peace, but when I speak, they are for war. Now that is the first psalm. Now I'm going to tell you something here, that these 15 psalms are actually divided into five little groups of three. Five threes are 15. And our first group is 120, 121, and 122. Now, it's easy enough for me to stand here and say, well, they're in five groups of three. And I almost expect to hear you say, well, how come? I can't see five groups of three there. There's just 15 headings, 15 psalms. Well, there's a little theme. A little theme which goes through, which divides these into five groups of threes. You'll notice at the end, which is the end of our first three, that is the end of Psalm 122, we come to this little bit here. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May they prosper that love thee. Peace be within thy walls and prosperity within thy palaces. For my brethren and my companions' sakes, I will now say, peace be within thee. For the sake of the house of the Lord, I will seek thy good. The general idea at the end of this three is peace. Peace required for our companions and our brethren's sake. Peace be within Jerusalem and peace all around. Now, another little thing that you may like to hear, might be interested in, let me get to verse 6, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. That is a somewhat difficult thing to translate and contain the same feeling, the same element, the same impression that is contained in the original. If we read it in Hebrew, it's like this, Shalom, Yerushalayim, Yishalu. The same vowels, the same sounds, it is a very elaborate alliteration. Shalom, peace. Yeru, that is city. Shelaim, the city of much peace. And Yishelu, may it be come to pass. So, just a little idea and the sort of things that we can never see in our English version. Now then we have the second set of three. So we have 21, 22. Then we have 23, 24, and 25. The end of 25 If you just turn over to that one, the last verse, but just such as turn aside unto their, from their crooked ways, unto their crooked ways, the Lord will lead them away with the workers of iniquity, but peace upon Israel. So it ends again with this same general idea. The first three end with the idea, a little elaborately expressed, and this one expresses it quite simply. Peace be upon Israel. But then what is peace? What is peace? We have peace in here. We've been blessed with peace. We've been free to come and go. We've been free to talk however we will. We have been free to sleep, to walk, to wake, to do just whatever we like. But is that total peace? Well, I'll just read you what the Sansino says about it. Peace be upon Israel. He says this is the supreme culminating prayer. Peace is the end of tyranny, of hostility, of division. Behold how good it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. Disquiet, alarm, peace is freedom and harmony, security and blessedness. That is peace. So now we want 126, 127, and down to the end of 128. And you'll see there in the last verse there, the last two verses, the Lord bless thee out of Zion, and see thou the good of Jerusalem all the days of thy life, and see thy children's children, and peace be upon Israel. So each one of these threes ends with that particular idea. 129, 130, 131, which is our psalm for this evening. The last verse, O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time forth and forever. Now you can say, well, the word peace isn't there. But let me tell you, if you look at the words, and please look at them for yourself, please examine them, check them, take them apart and see whether what I say is anything near right at all. From this time forth and from evermore. Now, up to this point in the Psalms, and we'll go through it in a little more detail, we've had the idea of long life. We've had the idea of the enduring family. We've had the endurance of God. But at this particular point, Israel, all those men, those people who are for the Lord, he says, from this time forth and forever. And at this point, the idea of eternity is interjected. And then we go over to the last one, which is the end, Psalm 134. The Lord bless thee out of Zion, even he that made heaven and earth. And at that point, we have utter, total, complete peace, a godly peace. So back to 120 again. In my distress, I called unto the Lord, and he answered me. Now, if we are in distress, there is no peace. O Lord, deliver my soul from lying lips, from a deceitful tongue. What shall be given unto thee, and what shall be more be done to thee, thou deceitful tongue? Well, sharp arrows and a burning. Woe is me that I sojourn where I shouldn't be, that I dwell within the tents of people that I shouldn't be with. My soul hath full long had her dwelling with those that hate peace. I am all peace, but when I speak, they are for war. Now I know that that statement there, I am all peace, isn't quite the same as you have in yours. I am for peace, but when I speak, they are for war. And if ever, whichever one we look at, you get those slight variations. The general idea, and there's nothing wrong with the translations, they all convey what the song has sent, what the songs intend to say. So when we come turn over and we get to Psalm 121, I will lift up mine eyes unto the mountains or to the hills, from whence shall come my help. When I first read that, which was many, many years ago, I took it that what we were doing is we were looking up to the hills as though God resided on top of the hill, and if we looked up there, we should find something worthwhile, and that was where our help would come from. In the Sonsino version, which I think is the most accurate translation, it says, I will lift up mine eyes unto the mountains, from whence shall come my help, and it is put as a question. It is not put as a statement, I'll lift my eyes unto the hills, because I know from those higher elevations I shall get some help. No, it is, I will lift up mine eyes unto the mountains, and we're still bewildered, we're still searching. From where will come my help? Will it come from the top of the mountains? The answer comes in the next verse. No. My help cometh from the Lord, the one who made heaven and earth, the one who made the hills. He will not suffer thy foot to be moved. He that keepeth thee will not slumber. Behold, he that keepeth Israel doth neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is thy keeper. The Lord is thy shade upon thy right hand. The sun shall not smite thee by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord shall keep thee from all evil. He shall keep thy soul. The Lord shall guard thy going out and thy coming in from this time forth and forever. He shall guard thy going out and thy coming in from this time forth and forever. But that is through your lifetime. It is not into eternity. This is something which concerns what you are doing, what we are doing here and now. We lift up our eyes unto the hills, looking to see where our help will come from. We realize that it doesn't come from that quarter at all. It comes from the Lord. And the Lord will not suffer us to be removed. The Lord is our keeper. The Lord is our shade. The Lord shall keep thee from all evil. He shall keep thy soul. The Lord guard thy going out and thy coming in. And that's what we do every day, isn't it? As we walk around, as we do our daily rounds, as we do the things which we have to do to earn our living or to maintain just an ordinary bodily health. He says that you shall have during your lifetime, and that will endure with you. So we are going, we're making a journey. We're starting from this position in our distress, calling unto the Lord. We're looking around to the hills to see just where our help is going to come from, which quarter is going to be the quarter that will relieve our distress, that will help to raise us up and give us comfort. 122. I rejoiced when they said unto me, let us go up to the house of the Lord. We've searched, and I, along with other people, have decided that what we have to do, we're no longer looking around somewhat listlessly and wondering idly, well, where are we going to find help? The decision is made. We feel happy. A whole number of people round about us have said, well, why don't we go up to the house of the Lord? Do you think? Have you been there with those people in that day? And if you had, as we have here, if it were possible, and somebody started this little word among us, now suppose we go up to the house of the Lord. Our hopes are being raised. Our spirits are being raised. The whole tone of everything we're thinking is raised. Our feet are standing within thy gates, O Jerusalem. Now we haven't come from a long distance. We are now standing, and there's no great period of time in these Psalms. There's no interval suggested. We are now standing within thy gates. Jerusalem that are builded as a city that is compact together. Whither the tribes go up, even the tribes of the Lord, as a testimony unto Israel, to give thanks unto the name of the Lord. We started from a position of distress, and we're now gaining an exuberance. But we'll see that those things change as we go through the Psalms. For there in Jerusalem were set the thrones for judgment, the thrones of the house of David. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May they prosper that love thee. Peace be within thy walls and prosperity within thy palaces. For my brethren and my companions' sake, I will now say, peace be within them. For the sake of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek thy good. A locked-in association, a declaration that we are going to do something. And what we're going to do is, for the sake of the house of the Lord our God, we are going to seek not my good, but thy good. We're going to do what we can to satisfy what God requires of us. And when we do that, we are doing what God requires us to do. It is the sake, I'm not saying it's for myself, it is the sake of you. And you are doing it, of course, for the sake of me. Psalm 123. Unto thee I lift up mine eyes, O thou that art enthroned in the heavens. We've decided to go to Jerusalem. We have no longer looking around searching as though we are lost. We don't know what to do. We've made the decision to go to Jerusalem. We've declared that we are going to seek the good. We have lifted up our eyes now, O thou that art to God that is enthroned in the heavens. And we make now just a little analogy. Just as the eyes of servants unto the hand of their master, as the eyes of a maiden unto the hand of her mistress, so our eyes look unto the Lord our God, until he be gracious unto us. In humility and in patience, we have come to seek this position, and we are now waiting until we get a response. We can't wait long. Something has to happen. We can't just stand around and think, well, let's just wait and see what does happen. No. We pray. And this is the way we pray. Be gracious unto us, O Lord. Be gracious unto us. For you are full sated with contempt. Our soul is full sated with the scorning of those that are at ease and with the contempt of the proud oppressors. We feel that. We're conscious of it all around us. And we ask God to listen to our prayer. Psalm 124. If it had not been the Lord was for us, let Israel now say, if it had not been the Lord who was for us when men rose up against us, then they had swallowed us up alive when their wrath was kindled against us. Then the waters had overwhelmed us, the stream had gone up over our soul. Then the proud waters had gone over our soul. The previous psalm, we had raised ourselves up. We had lifted ourselves up. We had possibly become a little more exuberant than was permitted. We had generated within ourselves almost a state that I am saving myself. But this one holds us back. You're going up a little too fast. You have much to learn. If it had not been the Lord who was for us, let Israel now say, if it had not been the Lord who was for us when man rose up against us, then they had swallowed us up. We can't make the journey on our own. Unless God is there to guide us, to keep us, to protect us, we should have been swallowed up. I wonder whether that happened in the 1967 war, when Israel fought against such enormous odds, and despite the millions of soldiers arrayed against them, nevertheless, apparently, God was for them. Then the waters had overwhelmed us. The stream had gone over our soul. Then the proud waters had gone over our soul. Blessed be the Lord, who has not given us as a prey to their teeth. Our soul is escaped as a bird out of the snare of the fowlers. The snare is broken, and we are escaped. Our help is in the name of the Lord, who made heaven and earth. And so we go to Psalm 125. As the mountains are round about Jerusalem, so the Lord are round about his people, from this time forth and forever. Now I said a little earlier on that this was, the idea of eternity was introduced later. But in this particular case, as so many of these things, there are qualifications.
As the mountains are round about Jerusalem, so the Lord is round about his people from this time forth and forever. That also is eternity. But it is not any individual group. It is Jerusalem and those who seek God in whatever generation they come. It is eternity, but it's not your eternity or anybody else's particular eternity. It is the eternity which God knows. Shema Adonai, Shema Israel, the people who are for God. Adonai, the Eternal One. Eloheinu, the one who you belong to, that God. That God is one. For the rod of wickedness shall not rest upon the lot of the righteous, that the righteous put not forth their hands unto iniquity. Do good, O Lord, unto the good, unto them that are upright in their hearts. But as for such as turn aside unto their crooked ways, the Lord will lead them away with the workers of iniquity. But peace shall be upon Israel. Peace, the end of tyranny, hostility, division. How good it is to dwell in unity. Disquiet, alarm, freedom, harmony, and security, and blessedness are peace. Psalm 126. When the Lord brought back those that returned to Zion, we were like unto them that were in a dream. Then was our mouth filled with laughter and our tongue with singing. Do you think you would be in that state? Do you think if you'd started from this condition of in distress and calling unto the Lord and feeling that he had in some way or another given you the idea that he was responding to you, that you had been brought back into the royal city, into the city of Jerusalem, do you think that you would be filled like that? Then was our mouth filled with laughter and our tongue with singing. Then said they among the nations, the Lord hath done great things with these. The people around about can see what has happened. I think everyone here will have some idea, either a partial idea, or might even have developed a total idea of what will happen when Christ returns. The Lord hath done great things with us. We are rejoiced. Will that be your reaction? If you're resurrected and you know that Christ is there, you may not be able to see him at that moment, but you know. You were in distress, and the Lord has answered you. Then was our mouth filled with laughter and our tongue with singing. Then we pray again. Turn our captivity, O Lord, as the streams in the dry land. They that sow in tears shall reap in joy. Though he goeth on his way weeping that beareth the measure of seed, he shall come home with joy, bearing his sheaves. The sheaves, of course, we have sown during the course of our lifetime. The things we have done can be likened unto seeds. And those seeds germinate, they sprout, and eventually they bring forth fruit. And Christ is the ultimate fruit inspector. He will look to see just what we have brought forth. 127. You'll notice that this is a song of ascents for Solomon. And of course, Solomon is just a variant form of the Hebrew word shalom, which is peace. We might have tried hard. We might have felt that we have succeeded either in some part measure. But it says here, except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh, but in vain. We can't do it ourselves. We are not capable of accomplishing the whole thing. We are dependent on God and his Christ. It is vain for you to rise up early and sit up late, either eat the bread of toil, so he giveth unto his beloved sleep, Lo, children are a heritage of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. As arrows in the hand of a mighty man, so are the children of one's youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be put to shame when they speak with their enemies in the gate. And that ends what we would call Psalm 127. But it goes on. Happy is every one that feareth the Lord, that walketh in his ways. When thou eatest the labor of thy hands, happy shalt thou be, and it shall be well with thee. We haven't been allowed to be down in the trough of depression too long. The Psalms are there to help us ascend. Not ascend from a low elevation to a high elevation, not necessarily to go up to one of our own capital cities, but to help us ascend from a state of distress to a state of unity with God. That is the upgoing. It is as if we had offered our sacrifice, we had lifted it up and put it on the altar. Eloth. Happy is everyone that feareth the Lord, that walketh in his ways. When thou eatest the labor of thy hands, happy shalt thou be. Thy wife shall be as a fruitful vine in the innermost parts of thy house, thy children like olive plants round about thy table. I can't help notice, and I don't suppose any of you will have failed to notice the same thing. During the course of each day, there's a whole mess of little children running around, scooting around, clambering hither, thither, and yon, sometimes getting under your feet, looking up at you and smiling. Is that the state that we shall be in the kingdom? The wife is a fruitful vine, the children round about, a plentiful table, and everything at peace. No need to be afraid. No need to have to wonder whether some harm will come upon them. But no, you can see their happy little faces, and you know that all will be well with them. Behold, surely thus shall the man be blessed that feareth the Lord. The Lord bless thee out of Zion. And see thou the good of Jerusalem all the days of thy life, and see thy children's children. Peace be upon Israel. The theme continues. We are not at any point here personally projected into eternity, but God is eternal. His purpose is eternal. The Lord bless thee out of Zion, and see thou the good of Jerusalem all the days of thy life, whichever generation we're in. And these psalms have endured through many generations. Psalm 129, much have they afflicted me from my youth up. So after getting up to this state, this feeling that we have made the grade, this feeling that we have reached some sort of semblance of unity with God, we're now sort of pushed down a little bit. You're going too fast. You're climbing the ladder a little too quickly. You have to learn other things on your journey upward. Much have they afflicted me from my youth up, but they have not prevailed against me. The plowers plowed upon my back. They made long their furrows. But the Lord is righteous. He hath cut asunder the cords of the wicked. Let them be ashamed and turn backward, all they that hate Zion. And of course, when we look at this, he hath cut asunder the cords of the wicked. Psalm 2. O come, let us cast their cords away from us and break their bands asunder. The Lord that sitteth in the heavens shall laugh, he shall have them in derision. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry and thou perish in the way. Kiss the Son is not possibly the best translation. And I don't want anybody to alter the translation. If we can just remember that these are possible qualifications, kiss the Son there is to bend the knee. The word is barak. We're going to get that one again in the 134th Psalm. So when we bend the knee, we do as you know many times, when a person bends in obedience to a higher authority, all too frequently they would bow, bend low, and kiss the outstretched hand. And that really is what it means when it says, kiss the Son, in the second psalm. Verse 6 of Psalm 129. Let them be as the grass upon the housetops, which withereth afore it springeth up, wherewith the reaper filleth not his hand, nor he that bindeth sheaves his bosom. Neither do they go by, say, the blessing of the Lord be upon you. We bless you in the name of the Lord. Now, there's a little bit of an allegory there. Let the grass that grows upon the housetops. Now, anyone who's seen any of those old mud roofs, anyone who's seen an old straw thatched roof will know that eventually, after a period of time, grass does start to grow on those roofs. Actually, I've seen grass grow on thatched roofs within a year. That's because there has at times been little bits of seed, little bits of grain left in the straw that the roof was thatched with, and that germinates and it grows up, and you'll see little bits of green sprouting all over your roof. But as the roof ages and you get little bits of soil and dust accumulating, and seeds, wind-blown seeds, will start to sprout. But as soon as the sun comes up, it dies. The reaper cannot, he says in verse 7, the reaper cannot fill his hand from that. He cannot bind sheaves from that. Neither do they that go by say, the blessing of the Lord be upon you. We bless you in the name of the Lord. Psalm 30 says, maybe you've gone up a little too far, a little too fast. Out of the depths have I called thee, O Lord. Lord, hearken unto my voice. Let thine ear be attentive to the voice of my supplications. If thou, Lord, should mark iniquity, O Lord, who could stand? That's a condition that we must all go through sometime or another. Lord, a plea, hearken unto my voice. Let your ear be attentive unto my cry, to the voice of my supplication. And of course, a supplication is an asking. We are pleading for something. And what we are pleading for is this. Lord, if thou should mark iniquity, which one of us could stand? But there is forgiveness. Thou that fearest the Lord, I will wait for the Lord. My soul doth wait, and in his word do I hope. Is that us? Is that you? Is that me? Waiting for the Lord, and in his word do we hope. Verse 6, my soul does indeed wait for the Lord, more than watchman for the morning, yea, more than watchman for the morning. O Israel, that is all those who would be people of God. Israel, for with the Lord there is mercy, and with him is plenteous redemption. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. And he will redeem Israel from all Israel's iniquities. And so in Psalm 130. And so we come to Psalm 131. Lord, my heart is not haughty, nor mine eyes lofty. Neither do I exercise myself in things too great for me or in things too wonderful for me. Would you feel that here, that there's humility? Would you feel that we're back with the Beatitudes? Lord, my heart is not haughty, nor mine eyes lofty. Have we been able to put ourselves into our right position before God? Neither do I exercise myself in things too great or in things too wonderful for me. Usurping the position of Christ, trying to be in place of Christ. Surely I have stilled and quieted my soul like a weaned child with his mother. My soul is with me like a weaned child. Unless ye become as a little child, ye shall in no way enter into the kingdom of heaven. O Israel, hope in the Lord, from this time forth and forever. This is eternity. This is your eternity and mine, if we have made the grade. If we have gone from that state of being poor in spirit to building our house upon the rock. O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time forth. Our hope is eternal, and our hope is not only eternal, but it is also in eternity. Psalm 132. Lord, remember unto David all his afflictions, how he swore unto the Lord and vowed unto the Mighty One of Jacob, surely I will not come into the tent of my house, nor go up to the bed that is spread for me. I will not give sleep to mine eyes, nor slumber to mine eyelids, until I find out a place for the Lord, a dwelling place for the Mighty God, the Mighty One of Jacob. God says, if I were hungry, I would not tell you. He says, I don't need you to build me a home. He said, if you do, I will come and dwell among you, but I haven't had a home before you came along. And there's no house that you can build me that I really need. But we have to build a house. And where do we have to build it? Not out there. We have to build it in here. That is our duty. We have to build that house within ourselves. And God says, if you do that, I will come and dwell among you. And I will not give slumber nor sleep to mine eyelids until I find a place for the Lord, a dwelling place within ourselves for the Mighty One. Lo, we have heard it as of being in Ephrath. We found it in the field of the wood. Let us go into his dwelling place. Let us worship at his footstool. Arise, O Lord, unto thy resting place, thou and the ark of thy strength. Let thy priests be clothed with righteousness, and let thy saints shout for joy. For thy servant David's sake, turn not away the face of thine anointed. Well, Psalm 132 is the longest psalm of the lot. I would like to, verse 12, if thy children keep my covenant and my testimony that I shall teach them, their children also forever shall sit upon thy throne. For the Lord hath chosen Zion. He hath declared it for his habitation. Now up to now, we've been either in the second person or the third person in all of these psalms. But all of a sudden, it becomes in the first person. This is the voice of God. And he says, this is my resting place forever. Here will I dwell, for I have desired it. I will abundantly bless her provision. I will give her needy bread in plenty. Her priests also will I clothe with salvation, and her saints shall shout aloud for joy. There will I make a horn to shoot up unto David. There have I ordered a lamp for mine anointed. That is the voice of God. And then the psalmist adds, his enemies will I clothe with shame, but upon himself shall his crown shine. This brings us to 133, and I hope you can remember your peace. Behold how good and pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. And that, the blessing there, is life forevermore. That is the blessing and the promise. Which brings us to Psalm 134. Behold, bless ye the Lord, all ye servants of the Lord. The word bless there
his barak, to bow the knee. Behold, bless ye the Lord, all ye servants of the Lord, they that stand in the house of the Lord in the night seasons. Lift up your hands to the sanctuary and bless ye the Lord. Barak again. The Lord bless thee out of Zion, Barak, even he that made heaven and earth. Now, it is Barak, but there is a little difference in each particular case. Behold, bless ye the Lord, all ye servants of the Lord. Are we servants of the Lord? We are now in Psalm 134. We have ascended from this, in my distress, I called unto the Lord and he heard me. We have ascended from this point of realizing that we do indeed have a deceitful tongue. We've been through all those stages. And we now stand in the temple to bless the Lord. Now there are slight changes in this word, as I say. There's changes in the conjugation, there's changes in the emphasis, there's changes in the force of the words. This bless, lift up your hands, verse 2, to the sanctuary and bless the Lord. Now when you lift your hands up in the sanctuary to the Lord, you lift your hands up and you hold them this way, with the fingers outstretched and the palms upturned. Well, a most peculiar little twist in the Hebrew. When it says, the Lord bless thee out of Zion. The Lord is blessing us. But his hands are not that way. His hands are that way. His hands are outstretched to give and to fill our hands. The Lord bless thee out of Zion, even he that made heaven and earth and offers life forevermore. Shema Israel, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. That Lord truly is one, and one is absolutely unique. Thank you.